Hello and welcome back to Street Photography Magazine. I'm your host again, Bob Patterson. And we have another special guest with us today as our featured photographer. His name is David Winkler. And David is he's a retired Los Angeles police detective. So we've all seen these guys on TV, LAPD, right? So he's going to tell us all about it. But he's a retired detective. He spends a lot of his time photographing in the city of Los Angeles. And so I'm not going to tell the story. We're going to let him tell it. But David, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad. Before we get into your story, I've got a little backstory to tell how we connected. And it's kind of strange. But a few weeks ago, I'm in the martial arts. I have been for 20-some years, and my master's master is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I live up in, and so he's like the master of all of us, and he was going to be promoted to ninth degree black belt. Big deal, very big deal. So a group of us traveled to Pittsburgh, and it was a surprise. So he was surprised with this promotion. Well deserved. As a photographer, I brought a camera with me, and so I shot this thing. I shoot everything, and so I shot this whole event. From my perspective, is actually somebody is participating in it. So I took, I don't know, 300 photos and brought them back. And I decided to make, of course, I made them available to all the people in our school and the Pittsburgh school. And I decided to make a little video out of it using iMovie. The Ken Burns effect, and you always want to put that to music, right? So I put this together. I selected the photos. I thought, what music am I going to use? And I'm spending hours trying to do this, and I put it aside. Next morning, it was Monday morning, I got up, and in my email was a message from David. Very simple message, basically saying you might want to look at this, and he had a link to his Vimeo site, video. So I go in and I watch a couple of his videos, and I go, this is really nice. And one of them had the perfect song for my video. So I stole your song, and I complimented you on it in an email. So I stole your song. I go, this is perfect. I've been beating my brains out for hours trying to figure out what song to get. So you didn't say in the video who the song was by, so I actually had to play the audio into my phone so Siri could tell me who performed the song. So I did a little detective work on my own, so I found this. And anyway, but I really liked what David was doing with his videos and his work in the city of Los Angeles, so we connected, and here we are. So,
okay.
I'm sorry to take so much of your time to tell this story. So now it's your turn. Why don't you give us a little bit of your background? Tell us a little bit of your history as a police officer and how that all came together so that you're working on the streets photographing in Los Angeles now.
Okay. I've got quite a varied background. I've been in law enforcement for 38 years, or have been. And I started out, I'm not sure if you're familiar at all with Los Angeles, but when I started out, I worked in what was called then the Watts area, mm-hmm. which was now called South Central. And it's a just poor neighborhood. And I was there, the Watts riots, worked there at the time in that area. And then a few years after that, it just became... It became too tense for me. And as I was driving to work, I started having headaches, and I thought, it's time now for a change. So I transferred from there to West Hollywood. West Hollywood incorporates the Sunset Strip and all the clubs. The nightclubs were there. They're still there, actually. And in those days, in the Sunset Strip area, by the way, stop me if I'm babbling too much, but in those days, it was wall-to-wall, young people going to the clubs. Drugs were, of course, very popular. It was the time of the free love movement. War was going on, and there was anti-war demonstrators. And as time went on, I began to see my attitudes change. And ultimately, they changed quite drastically to the point where I worked for the farm labor boycott, which was Cesar Chavez was trying to stop people from buying grapes and lettuce and trying to get rights for the farm workers. I worked in a halfway house for young people who were having trouble either with the law or with their families. I worked for the Suicide Prevention Center for, I think, 11 or 12 years as a counselor and then a trainer. I demonstrated against the war, in fact, all the wars. I used to go to meetings in the ghetto areas of Los Angeles, meetings with the police and the public, which were very disappointing, frankly. Anyway, I've done just a huge amount of stuff. Most of it was very alienating as far as my coworkers were concerned. And it just caused me lots of grief. And ultimately, I became a detective and remained a detective until I retired. And I was a detective for 24 years, again, in the West Hollywood area. And mostly dealing with violent crime, but I kind of, at some point, almost investigated everything. I actually got my break to get into the detective bureau because they needed a juvenile detective, and nobody wanted to work with the young people. And I was working at the halfway house for young people, so it kind of gave me an entree into the detective bureau to start with, and that's where it's been. And then after I left, after I retired, then I worked a year for a homeless agency in the San Fernando Valley. It's I think the largest agency that houses homeless people. And then after that, I went to work. Then I moved to Colorado for a short time, and I worked for the Innocence Project there, which is an organization that investigates and represents people who are wrongfully imprisoned. And then when I left Colorado and came back to Los Angeles, I started again with another Innocence Project here in Los Angeles, and I've been with them for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years. And I think, I don't know if I mentioned this, I'm not sure if I mentioned any of this to you, but the Innocence Project here, our most recent success was a woman named Susan Mellon, N-E-L-L-E-N, who was in prison for 17 years for murder, and we were able to get her released, show that she wasn't involved in the murder. And that's what I do now, in addition to my camera stuff, so... That's kind of a nutshell of it all, but that's my background, briefly.
So it's pretty amazing. You've gotten involved with a lot of, I hate to put a label on it, but liberal causes. And I would imagine most of your coworkers are pretty conservative, or maybe not.
No, that's true. It is true. And that's part of what has led me to some of the problems that I've encountered. My attitude is quite different from my coworkers, and one of the ways I was able to survive and do the work. And by the way, let me tell you something. I absolutely loved the work I did. I didn't love the organization, but I loved the work itself. I'd be doing it now if I could. But there is this struggle, at least for me, an internal struggle of believing certain things about, you know, how our society should function and how we should be with each other, and the attitudes that I'm around at work. So it was a problem, and it remains a problem for me.
Hmm. Now, working on the Innocence Project, do you actually use a lot of your detective skills to help? I guess you're essentially solving the crime, right? Or at least getting enough proof to show that the person really didn't do what they were accused of. So is that your function in that organization, to use some of your investigative skills?
Yeah, that's my job is obviously an investigator, but when you talk about investigative skills, I think of it more as just the ability to sit down and talk with somebody. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we do. We re-interview everybody possible to see if their story changes, if their memory has changed at all, if they're if their position has shifted, that what they might have said then is not quite the way they see it now, or maybe they didn't tell the truth then and now they're willing to. So that's really what my function is just to interview people. And I do it, by the way, with Deirdre O'Connor, who is the it's her organization. She's the head of it and formed the Innocence Project, which is called Innocence Matters. So I'm not sure I answered your question, but
no, you did. That reminds me of the television show on TNT, Cold Case. Do you ever watch? Well, I guess it's not Cold Case. The two women, one was a retired detective and the other one was a prosecutor, and they go to town, usually small towns, and help the local police on television solve really old cases. Have you ever seen that? That's pretty interesting.
No.
That's what they do. They just interview everybody, and it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember the name of it. Well, maybe you don't even want to watch these things on television. So,
well, I don't watch police shows just because they're aggravating to watch because of Hollywood distorts things so terribly. But anyway,
yeah, that's true. Well, in terms of photography, you told me in an email that you spend your time every Sunday riding your bicycle into downtown L.A. and talking to and photographing a lot of people who are homeless or mentally ill on the streets. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
Yeah, actually, one of my videos that I mentioned to you is strictly about, it's called Abandoned, and it's strictly about the homeless situation, not only in Los Angeles, but generally in Los Angeles. Let me clarify something. When I go, as I do every Sunday, into Los Angeles with my bike, I spend a lot of time in the homeless area. The homeless area in Los Angeles is huge. It's just thousands and thousands of people living on the street in the downtown area. But they are so poor and in such bad health, both physically and mentally, that I spend most of my time, and I don't spend time taking their picture. I spend very little time shooting the homeless in the downtown area, mm-hmm. partly because of the tragedy of their lives, though that doesn't stop me from taking the pictures. But it's also, it's very invasive, and I also don't mind that particularly, but the mental health issues are so tragic in that area that it's a little bit unnerving when you start pointing cameras at people. Mm-hmm. You get lots of not only bad, but sometimes rather dangerous challenges. And so I tend to avoid picture taking of them specifically, but I spend hours and hours and hours in that area around them, watching them, listening to them. And for me, it's just absolutely, it's both tragic and fascinating to see people living their lives out in such deplorable conditions. But that's what I do. Even though I'm there with a camera, I don't take a lot of photographs of the homeless in that area, but I take a huge amount of pictures in that whole area, in the downtown area, and all around the Los Angeles area. Is that somewhat to explain what I do on Sunday?
Sure.
Okay.
So why do you do this?
The video that I have of the homeless, I was just absolutely drawn to, let me make it a little bit more personal because that's really what it is. Mm-hmm. When I point my camera at somebody, particularly somebody that's homeless or it's living on the edge, I'm really pointing the camera at myself as well, because I can't escape wondering when I take their picture where the dividing line is between their life and mine. And I don't know what that answer is. I don't know at what point something could happen in my life that would cause me to be living as they are. So it's almost a self-exploration when I'm out with my camera. And it's not only the homeless, it's just people in general. Whenever I'm shooting, And it almost doesn't matter what the scene is. Whenever I'm shooting a picture or pictures, I always feel like there's a part of me in every picture that I take. And I'm not saying that in a good way. I'm just saying that it's an internal struggle that I wrestle with. And I try and resolve with my camera, but there's really no resolution. So that's part of my pursuit is my own personal struggle with the world around me and with life and with other people's lives as well.
You know, I've had other people say that. And I think some of the strongest images we see are ones that people, where they see themselves seen or themselves in their subject, click the shutter. So that's, yeah, I agree.
Bob, I don't know if it's obvious when you look at the work I do, the photographs I take, but almost everything I take, I just feel like there's a piece of me in there. It may not show, but I feel that there's a piece of me in there. Even of the ones where I try and inject some humor, I shoot more on the dark side, I suppose, but there are some of my photographs where I try and find some humor in the situation. But even in those, I feel like I'm invested in that as well.
When you were talking about photographing in downtown L.A., you said that some people would say that the area is going through a renaissance, and others might say that it's being exploited and feel more that it's being exploited. What's going on there that makes you feel that way?
Well, there's almost hardly a week passes where I don't go down there and I see something gone that was there before. Often it's a building. The bridges are being taken down. The area is undergoing a radical change. Some of the old buildings are being restored, but they're being turned into condominiums and apartments. Mm-hmm. And on the ground level, retail, stores. But there are areas that have been absolutely cleared of any structure, and new structures are being put up. And I just don't. Now, I know nothing about this area that I'm talking about, so it's all very my personal view of something that may be totally inaccurate. But it just doesn't seem as though the downtown area can support the kind of building and ultimately the inhabitants that are going to occupy these things. I don't know how the downtown area can sustain that kind of growth, but the developers are very active down there, changing everything they possibly can. And I guess we're just going to have to wait and see. People, as I mentioned to you in the email, people see it as a renaissance of the area, that it's coming back alive and it's changing radically. Some of the area, many, many years ago, some of the area in the downtown neighborhood was occupied by, these were the old factories that went out of business. They became occupied by the artists who could get a low rent and a large space, and they had artist lofts there. But as time went on, I guess the developers, the owners of the property, saw that there was money to be had, and the rents went up, and the artists were driven out. And now those same buildings are being occupied by the wealthier class of people. So that's my view, is that it's being exploited. Others would say absolutely not. It's great change, and it was needed. And I don't know what the answer is. I just see it as, from my own personal perspective, which could be very wrong.
Cut. A second. There's some kind of noise. I don't know if you're, it sounds like shuffling papers or something moving around. Maybe you're just from holding the phone up to your ear.
Okay, I'll try and be more careful. I'm not sure what I was doing. But
yeah,
I
don't know. It's easy when you're talking and you're just kind of moving around, or it might just be the sound of your hand on the phone. But just thought I'd point it out. It's not
okay.
Real bad. But okay, all right. I'm going to start again. Let me gather my thoughts here. Okay, in 3, 2, 1. My wife and I, we travel a good bit, and we really like to come to California, one of our favorite places. But we notice as outsiders that there are a lot of homeless, more than most places. I don't know what the reason is for that. Maybe because the weather is so nice, or it might have something to do with your local vagrancy laws or whatever. Do you know what the cause is or what the reason is?
Well, my guess would be that it was so ideal here that it's an all year long living situation for mm-hmm. those who don't have a place to be. If you were in the East Coast, you'd freeze in the winter, and it's survival is really a very risky thing there.
Sure.
Here it's when I talk with somebody in Colorado, and they tell me the weather is 30 or 40 degrees there, and I'm in a T-shirt here, and I'm actually sweating a little bit. The disparity between the areas is pretty shocking. So I think life is just much, much easier for people here.
Oh, that's true. It's, especially in our part of the country, it's a tough place to be in the winter, even when you have a roof over your head.
Yeah.
Obviously, I talk to a lot of street photographers. Almost everybody that I talk to in Los Angeles, they all photograph in the same area, somewhere downtown. I forget. It sounds like a pretty small area, not very big. Is that the part of town you're in? I'm trying to remember some of the names of the streets.
What I do is I travel on my bicycle. I go all the way over to the west side of the downtown area, which is around where the freeway is, the Harbor Freeway. Mm-hmm. And then I go north and south, up and down all of the north-south streets, working my way west over to around Alameda, which is kind of a dividing line, I suppose. I go all over that area on my bike, out of that downtown area, down some of the manufacturing areas. But I also try not to just center my interest in the downtown area. So I live in Santa Monica, so I shoot in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. I shoot in Venice. I'll shoot in Westwood. I'll go into Beverly Hills and shoot there. It's wherever I end up is where I'm going to take pictures. You know, the beach areas are there's because they're crowded. Lots of people, lots of things going on. It makes it a little more interesting. But you know, as a street photographer, you just go wherever you can.
Yeah, that's true. And LA is pretty spread out, so you've got a lot of driving to do in places.
Yeah, it's very spread out.
You made some comments in your email that you're more old school, and you had some pretty interesting opinions about the current state of street photography. And I wonder if you could share a little bit of that with us.
Okay, I'll do that at the risk of offending you and those who follow you.
That's hard to do. At least offend
well, we'll
me,
see.
Anyway. I can't speak for anybody else.
Well, one of the things that troubles me is I think there's been a real deterioration in street photography. I think what's happened is everybody, and it amounts actually to everybody with an iPhone, which is the majority of the world now, I suppose, believes that if you point your camera as you walk down the street, you are a street photographer. And I just find that inaccurate, sometimes offensive. But I also think it yields a huge amount of terrible, poor quality, in some cases really crappy quality photography. And my concern is that it's getting more and more accepted rather than rejected. And I don't know whether that's accurate or not, but it troubles me. And to offend you even further, if I haven't already, I think a good example of that is the whole issue with Vivian Maier. I think Vivian Maier is quite an incredible woman. She was doing something in her time, which I think, and I'm not a photo historian, but I think very few women were doing then. I don't think that many women are doing it now. But she did it on, I would guess, a very limited budget. And she was really prolific in what she did. Some of her photographs, I think, are really good. But I don't think the majority of them, at least from what I've seen, now there's a lot that hasn't been seen. And again, this is my subjective opinion. But I don't think that Vivian Maier is what she's touted to be. I don't see her as this great photographer. I think she's an incredible woman doing something quite unusual, quite demanding, and actually quite incredible for her time. But I think she's been elevated to a position that I don't quite agree with. Now, what others in the field are going to say about me is that, okay, David, you're just jealous, and that's why you have that attitude. And the truth of the matter is, yes, I am. I wish I could get the accolades and the attention that Vivian Maier is getting. That's absolutely true. But that doesn't change my view of whether I think she's as good as she's being touted. But I think that's all part of the art world, which, and I'm not saying just photography, but just the world of art, that's really more driven by economics than it is by quality. Now, one can then say, after looking at some of my work, well, what makes you think you're so good and your stuff isn't any better than? And that all may be true. I don't know. It's very difficult for somebody to evaluate their own work. We tend to want to think that we are kind of the center of the universe, and that others are okay, but they're not quite as good, or maybe they're okay and as good. But I don't know that we're very, at least I'm not the best judge of my own work, whether it's good or bad or acceptable or not. Or, I just don't know. I love it, some of it. Some of it I think is mediocre, and some of it I don't think is good at all. I don't show you the stuff I don't like. Nobody sees that. So I don't know. It's just, it troubles me that it's a curious world that I think has, you know, I kind of see this in other fields as well, maybe films. Sometimes when I go to plays and performances, I think sometimes there's an overreaction to certain performers, certain art forms that just troubles me. I'm not sure it's as accurate as it should be or could be. So, did I ramble too much?
No, not at all. And I didn't hear anything offensive in what you had to say. You have some pretty strong opinions. I think you've got some really valid ones.
I'll tell you, Bob, I look at hundreds, if not thousands, of photographs online and in galleries and in museums. And I'd have to say the majority of what again, we're back to my own personal view, of course. But
that's all we all have.
The majority of what I see, I don't think rises to the level of really good street art or good street photography. So, but I think those, my opinions, I would guess other people are going to find them offensive, that I'm being too critical and, I don't know. That's just kind of my view.
Well, you know, you do live in La La Land.
That's true.
You don't really have a lot of rugged individualists there, I don't think. So, someone, I used to listen to Jim Rome a lot, who lives in your area. He's, you know, a sports talk show guy, and he always made fun of L.A., and he said, you know, when someone invites you to a restaurant, it's not like, hey, is the food any good? It's like, who else is going to be there? Or who's going to be there? You know, is Brad Pitt going to be there? Or, you know, are we going to see George Clooney? It's like, no, we just want to go for a good meal.
That's true.
Yeah, but you're living in the land of the Kardashians, you know. Mm-hmm. So
I'm not part of them, but I live in that land.
No, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. But, you know, I think, you know, especially our country here in the U.S., I mean, we just thrive on hype. And there's a lot of Me Too things going on. Someone says, I think Vivian Maier's a great artist. Well, me too. She's the greatest artist ever, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I do like her work personally.
I do too.
I can see, but she's got one hell of a story, and you know, we all love a good story.
Yeah, and that's very true. She does have a hell of a story.
Yeah, and her stuff was almost lost. It could have been in a landfill somewhere. So, but it is an interesting story. We do, I think, as Americans tend to follow the crowds. So I think, you know, your points are very valid.
Well, I don't know if they're valid because I think most people who have seen Vivian Maier's work and know of her would not agree with me. So I don't know if they're valid. They're only valid in my world, but I don't know that in general they would be considered valid.
Well, if they're valid to you, that's all that matters. Now, you made another comment about your photographs. I mean, you shoot a lot, but you said most of your work is on a hard drive somewhere. So why don't you share more of it?
Well,
or maybe this is the start.
Maybe what? Say that again.
I said maybe this is the start. Talking to me.
Well, it depends. Maybe it's the end. It all depends on how people.
I don't think so.
Perceive my. I guess you know what I think. My email to you when I said take a look at this stuff and see if you're interested was really a last ditch, desperate attempt to get my stuff out there, which I didn't expect to even get this far, frankly. So I've made some submissions in the past, but it's really for what I do, it's almost impossible to get any recognition. The kind of work I'm interested in, the street photography that I find interesting, is not the stuff that's in galleries and in museums and that people hang on their walls. The world of photography and the Photoshop world has passed me by. I do some modifying of my, I'll change the lights, mm-hmm. the light settings if I need to, and I'll crop something, but I don't put clouds in where they never existed. I don't put a tree into a scene. I don't even know how to do that.
You're better off.
It all depends. But what you see of my work is what I shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's what's popular now. And I just don't see that being displayed anywhere. That when I look at the work online and when I go to galleries and art shows, it's not the kind of stuff I'm doing. It's stuff that's been passed through Photoshop. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, even though it sounds like that. I mean, that's just what's become the norm and the standard for photography now.
So that's
street art is not popular. At least I don't think it is. You may have a different view about that because of what you do. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know much about galleries. I don't go to many galleries. I mean, I go to museums. I don't go to many commercial galleries where they make money selling photographs. I couldn't tell you. I know just the street photography art form has become very popular, at least among street photographers. So I'd recommend you get your work out there even more. Our editor, Ashley, and I are actually working on an ebook and maybe even a course to help photographers become better known in this modern digital age. A lot of people are in the situation as you. They do great work, but nobody knows about it. And
yeah.
So we're actually putting together a framework or a field guide for how to make use of this technology without spending your whole life messing around with it, to be better known around the world. And
You know what? To tell you the truth, I've really just become very discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not so discouraged that I don't still pursue my love of photography.
Yeah.
So I still constantly go out and shoot. But it really does die in my computer. I work on the images. I have those four videos on Vimeo. But that's the furthest I've ever gone, and as far, frankly, as I ever intended to go. And I was actually quite shocked when you contacted me and said you were interested. I really sent that off to you thinking I'll never hear from you again or anybody again.
Uh-huh.
And that's generally what occurs. You know, I'll send it off, and, you know, it's like an actor going for an audition. you go in, you read the part, and you leave, and you never hear from anybody again.
That's true. And that's true. Well, I tell you what, I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I take lots of photographs. Heck, I own a magazine and a very busy website, and hardly anybody sees my stuff because I don't put it on there. But you can. A lot of it starts with your website. If you have one that's easy to use and it's easier to publish your work. My main business is I'm a web developer, and so I build websites all day long. And people who can use theirs, they're easy to use and even fun to use in a way, publish more.
Yeah. I have a feeling that my website, which is pretty primitive, it may be a bit too political, but that was what I wanted to mix with my photography.
Oh, yeah. I think that's great. No, I would encourage you to publish it more. I have people. There are a lot of very talented photographers who nobody knows about because they don't share their work. And there are a lot of people who are pretty average photographers that get a lot of buzz just because they're very good at tooting their own horn.
Yeah.
And that's what
I don't do the tooting part.
So. No, that's okay. But that's part of why this magazine exists, is to give people who really love what they're doing a platform to share with the world.
So, Bob, tell me something. Who do you think should be the final arbiter of what's good or bad, then? How does one make that decision as to what should be published, what should be made available, whether I should be the final word about whether my work is as good as the next person, or who?
I think it's. Boy, I am so glad you asked that question. No one ever asked me questions, so I'm glad you. Of course, you're a professional interviewer, right? I think it's the viewer. It's always the person who's looking at the work. It's not me. I mean, I make my choices just based upon. And we talked about this before we started. I mean, I make the choices on what we publish just based on what I think. I try to step outside of my own skin to make choices, because if we publish everything that I like, it would get pretty boring. In terms of what people like, it's up to the viewer to determine what they like.
Let me ask something then again about that issue about the viewer. When I'm out and about with my camera, what I routinely and constantly see are people with whatever kind of camera they have taking pictures of themselves or their own group.
Oh yeah.
As they walk down the street, or as they stand in front of the waves of the ocean, or wherever they might be. So when you say it's the viewer who ultimately makes the determination, my fear is that the quality and interest of the viewer has declined radically, and I'm not sure. Of course, ultimately that's what we're left with. But I'm not sure that I want to. You know, somebody the other day said to me I should put my work on what's one of the photo sites that's so popular.
Flickr.
Maybe it was Flickr.
500
Instagram
feet.
Or something.
Instagram.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And I said, and they felt that it was a benefit if I did that for my work. Mm-hmm. And my reaction to that is, I don't want, look, I put a lot of concern and energy into what I do. Doesn't mean it's good. It's just that I work mm-hmm. hard at what I do. And I don't want somebody looking at my photographs on their phone on a 2-inch screen. I think you lose the meaning of what I'm trying to say in my photographs. But that's what the world has come to. Everything is viewed on a 2-inch screen. So I don't know if I want to leave what I want to say photographically to the viewer of an iPhone. But that's what the world is now. That's the way it is. And when I talked about it being old school, obviously my attitudes are old school too. But that's what concerns me. The quality and the concern for artwork, I think, has declined, and in some cases has diminished terribly. So,
really, I think, I mean, this is my personal opinion. Who cares what size screen they see it on? Now there is like the I guess what I call the thumbnail, you know, it's a good word, thumbnail situation or whatever. And, you know, like if you go to Flickr and you look through lots of photos on Flickr, there are just these little squares. And the ones that jump out at people or the people will actually look at look good in a thumbnail. And some photos, you need to look at them full size to be able to really appreciate what was done. And so that carries into the, you know, the world of the phone as well. It's a little bit bigger, but, you know, maybe a photo you make or anybody else makes doesn't look very good on that little screen because they can't see all the detail. But I think I've seen a lot of really good work on Instagram. We did a contest with an Instagram group earlier this year, and we chose the winner, and then and interviewed the winner, Vito from Portugal. He does some wonderful work. He shoots it only with the phone. He was a former commercial photographer. The guy's a fabulous photographer, and all he uses is an iPhone. And he keeps things very, very simple, but he's got a great eye, and he's mastered that tool and does very well with it. Of course, then there's most of the people who use iPhones are taking pictures of themselves in front of the ocean in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater or whatever it happens to be, and it's just, you know, personal snapshots. And they're all mashed in there together in Instagram. You know, there's a lot of junk in there, and there's some good stuff in there. And so I think my opinion is, you know, just because there's a lot of junk in there doesn't mean you shouldn't share your stuff because it is good, whether it's there or Flickr or anywhere else. My personal, I'll get off my soapbox in a second because I'm interviewing you, but my personal opinion is you need to have a home, have your own home, which is your website. And that's where you publish only your best work, and you use these other sites, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or whatever it is, to attract attention, to get people to come to your home to see your work. And you'll get people who are serious photographers or serious art lovers coming to look at it. And you may get other people who have like no appreciation at all looking at it too. But so
what? Bob, you know what my fear is? My fear is that unlike Vivian Meyer, when I die, my stuff will be tossed in a Dempsey dumpster somewhere. And that'll be the end of it. And frankly, that upsets me so deeply that this is predicated on the belief that my work is good. But putting that aside, it just troubles me so much to think that the efforts that I've put into what I do will end up in the trash somewhere. But that's really what's probably going to happen. I just can't imagine, and of course, I hate to wait till after my death to have whatever is going to happen, but that's the only way it's going to be. But it just troubles me that it really is never going to be, it's never going to reach the public. And that's just the way the photo world is, I guess, for me at least.
Well, if you don't try, it's not going to happen.
I know.
Vivian Meyer got lucky. I mean, she was, if that kid hadn't gone to those auctions, that auction, and bought that box of her stuff, it probably would be in a dumpster and none of us would know about her.
Yeah.
And so she got lucky. You know, you can make your own luck and do something.
Yeah. She got lucky after her death, unfortunately.
She did, yes. So not so lucky. She died. And, you know, and if you watch the movie about her, she wasn't doing so good in the last few years of her life.
Yeah.
Did you watch the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good. I think very good.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's an interesting story. Well, I mean, I'm trying to think of a good quote, but I will later, and I'll put it in the article. You know, but it's just like in the world of business or sales, if you don't ask, you don't get. So if you don't show your work, nobody's going to see it. No one can see it.
If you want to take a look at my website, you'll see some good quotes there.
Oh, yes. Good point. Well, let's do that. Yes, we're starting to run out of time here. So let's talk about some of your work. I'm sorry, we're just, we're just talking away here. And I have to switch screens because I've got all stuff here. Now, I may have picked out things you don't even want to talk about, but I picked photos that jumped out at me. And
well, those are the ones I'd be happy to talk about.
Okay.
Because I'd rather it come from what you saw as interesting rather than what I would think.
Okay. Okay. All right. And this is only based on what's on your site. So you have other work that actually I recommend you. I mean, after we get done here, if you can send us some of these images, we can put them in the article. But here's one in your Work in Progress 2 folder. And it's a picture of some people's feet, like under a lunch counter or something. You may not think anything of this. Well, you must because you put it on the website. But I like the composition and the lines, the shapes formed by the people's feet. And it makes me think, what's the rest of them look like? What are they doing there? So what can you tell us about this? Do you even remember taking the photograph?
The two people sitting on the bar stool?
Yeah.
Okay. I shot that in New York. I was in MoMA, the modern, mm-hmm. you know, the modern museum in New York. And I was having lunch and I looked up, in front of me was the standard, it's a restaurant in the museum. And it also has a bar. And these are two people sitting at the bar stool. And, much to the dismay of the people in the restaurant, they saw me crawling on the floor until I could get up into the range that I wanted for that shot. And I just snapped it, and it was just two people having drinking wine at the bar. But I just liked the idea of the way it was lit and the fact that you saw nothing but their feet, mm-hmm. and obviously the lower part of them. But I did the same in one of my videos that's on Vimeo, where I was in New York and I shot a group of people, mostly men, but two women, standing outside on the street, looked like having a parting discussion, and they looked like they might have been lawyers or whatever. A few had briefcases, and then the very next shot in that same video. Is a picture of, again, it's just the lower part of them. It's three women shot in Beverly Hills, again, having a conversation on the street. And I don't know, something intrigued me about what you might imagine if you just look at the bottom half of a group of people or of an individual. Mm-hmm. What do you imagine about the rest of them and mm-hmm. about their life? So that's kind of what intrigued me about that.
Yeah, yeah, leave something out. Okay, here's another one. Here's another one from New York. What's this about New York? You know, everybody's shooting in New York. Yeah, I really like this one. It's in your New York folder, and it's a woman.
Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, it's a woman in a bar or a restaurant, and she's looking at a magazine. And then along the top of the frame, there are all these coffee cups, in front of a red background. I just like the way that line, the coffee sort of frame, creates a frame of the part of a frame at the top of the photo. It's like the way it all comes together.
Yeah. And that, again, that's, you know, I guess with street photography, it's all just happenstance. You happen to be at the moment.
Correct.
Somewhere, yes. and you see something that catches your attention. It was Michelle and I walking on the street in New York, and she wanted to go in and try a cup of coffee, and I think it was called the Blue Bottle, a new coffee shop. And we walked in, she bought a cup of coffee, and I turned around, and I saw this woman, and I thought, my God, what an incredible picture with that red streak of coffee cups across the top. And I shot it, took one picture, and we walked out.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you shoot with, by the way?
I have a Nikon now that I use. And frankly, I've never had a piece of equipment, whether it was a computer, a tennis racket, or a photo or a camera in this case, that wasn't far better than I am. So it almost doesn't matter. The reason why I got a Nikon, and I could have gotten a Canon or anything else, I suppose, I was just looking for something with a fast enough shutter. Because mm-hmm. my previous camera that I took, I went to Bulgaria, and I bought my first digital camera. And the shutter, I liked the pictures, but the shutter was so slow mm-hmm. that you could almost count to three before you heard the shutter release. So I wanted something with a faster shutter, but as I said, the cameras have always exceeded my abilities.
I think that's true for like 99% of us. Which Nikon are you? People are going to ask. That's why I'm asking you.
Oh, okay. I have a D800.
D800. Okay, nice. Do you normally shoot with a prime lens, or are you curious?
I only have two lenses. I have a 50 millimeter.
Okay, perfect.
And I use that, and I have a 28-300.
Okay.
Those are the only two lenses I own, and they've served me very well. So.
Okay, good. Yeah, I like limiting the lens myself. All right, here, I've got one from Los Angeles that I really like. And it's a picture of an African-American gentleman sitting next to a rack of hats.
Ah, yeah.
I love this photo. It's sort of the classic golden spiral. And what can you tell us about that?
I spend a lot of time wandering in Venice and on the beach in Venice. And this was just a salesman. There's a lot of people that set up their own little portable stands during the week, on the weekends, and they'll sell whatever, they have of interest to themselves. And he was just a vendor of hats. I just happened to catch him when he was obviously not looking at me, and it just, the mood I just thought was really intriguing, that he's kind of, it almost looks like he's wishing he was somewhere else. There's not much more to it than that, which is pretty much how most of my pictures come about. When I'm roaming about, something pops up. The thing about street photography, if you stop, at least my experience, is if you stop to debate whether you should take the picture or not,
too late,
and you decide you should, it's gone.
Yeah.
So I try not, although I still do it, I try not to evaluate the scene, and I just try and, if it looks at all interesting, shoot it and then get rid of it later if you don't like it that much. But there's not, in street photography, there isn't time to decide, should I, shouldn't I, like it or not, wish the lighting was a little different. You just have to click the shutter and hope. And yep, that's how most of my stuff comes about.
Yep, you see it coming together. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, what troubles me is that the times when I don't take advantage of that, in a second, the head, for example, the guy with the hats, if he turns in a slightly different direction, the whole image is different. Doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
It's just a different image. And him glancing off like that, almost wondering if he, you can almost imagine him longing to be on an island somewhere with a cool beer or something.
Yeah.
A moment later, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was talking over you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish what your thought was.
No, I was just commenting that he's also sitting in the direct sunlight, and he probably is wishing he's in the shade somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of sitting in the sunlight, and you did mention Bulgaria. I want to talk about one of your shots from Bulgaria. We could probably spend all day just talking about your trip there. But it's a picture of a group of ladies, studababas, babushka ladies.
Yeah, yeah.
Love the photo. And again, just like you said, one thing I really like about it is all the women are looking off in the distance except for one of them, and she's turned towards the other lady and more in your direction.
Uh-huh.
And if she had been looking anywhere else, the photo I don't think would have been as strong. But what can you tell us about this one?
Michelle and I went to Bulgaria some years ago because there was every 5 years there's a folk festival there where they dance and play music, and it's up in the hills. And we spent, I think, 2 or 3 days there just wandering around. And that's when I had this Canon with the slow lens. It was my first camera.
Which one was
and
it?
And I, something I don't even, G6 or something?
Yeah, I had one of those. Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Yep.
I can hardly remember.
Great camera, but yeah, I took one of those to China. And, the shutter was really slow. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm interrupting your talking about the photo.
No, it's all right. It's just I saw this group of women out there, and they just fascinated me, as did most of the people there. And I took maybe 4 or 5 photos of this group of women, but when she turned in my direction, you know, what they were doing was they were all looking at a stage of performers in front of them, which is, of course, is out of the scene. But when she turned toward my, in my direction to say something to the woman next to her, then I snapped the last of four or five pictures. But it turned out to be, I thought, the more interesting of all of them, just because of her change in direction.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what caught my eye, too.
You know something, Bob? The thing that that troubles me when you ask me to talk about some of these is that I don't have a profound comment to make about why I took them. And, you know, it's like some artists would say, oh, I was studying light and dark, and I was looking for textures. And that's not what I do. I'm looking for an exciting moment or an unusual moment or some moment that just says something to me. And I shoot the picture, and the moment is gone. And I can't, most often, I can't explain exactly what it was. It's just, it just intrigued me. And sometimes, by the way, sometimes it's by accident. Sometimes I'm shooting something, and I'm actually surprised by what I end up getting, because it wasn't what I thought I was getting. So
that's true for everybody.
Yeah.
That's true for everybody. And, you know, you're just being honest about what you think and what you see. And, you know, the reason we ask these questions, we want to know what's going on inside your head. How do you think? What do you see? If somebody gives me some big lecture on the text, especially on street photography, because it happens so fast, you know, they're talking about the texture and this and that, and, you know, and I saw that. Oh, that's usually not the case. And, you know, I'm just looking for an honest answer of what's in your head. That's what you gave me.
Yeah. You know, what's in my head when I'm out shooting is this: I'm just looking for something that's out of the ordinary, and I don't even know what that means. But I think many of my pictures, there's something curious or unusual or a little bit out of the ordinary with them, and that's what I'm searching for. Most of the time, it's like when you go out fishing, although I'm not a fisherman. When you go out fishing, most of them you throw back into the water. Mm-hmm. You only bring home the big ones that you can boast about. And that's true with photography. You know, I don't show you the stuff that I'm not interested in or the stuff I've deleted. And I can't always explain, and often can't, what that moment was that excited me. It just happened.
Yep, that's true. That's true. Well, David, we're just about out of time here. So before we go, just wanted to ask you, where can people see your work? Would you share your?
If you go to, and it's what I sent you, I think, mm-hmm. It's vimeo.com/user, and then it's 831-7760. Those are the four Vimeos that I have, mm-hmm. Of the homeless, which is abandoned, of the downtown area, which is called downtown, of the one called Roaming with Dylan, and the fourth one, which is called Transitions. Those are the four that I have on the internet, other than my website, which is davidwinkler.net. Beyond that, nothing exists. Nor do I.
What else do you need? What else do you need? And we'll put links to both of those in the article, so
okay,
all y'all can go look at it. And I'd love to post one of your videos on there so people can.
Well,
play
I
it right
opened
the
up the one you mentioned, mm-hmm. The downtown one. Mm-hmm. I changed the the permissions or whatever you call it on Vimeo. You can access it. If that doesn't work, let me know.
I will.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
But Bob, listen, before you do go, mm-hmm. I have to tell you that I really do appreciate your following through and contacting me. I really didn't expect it. I thought it was another one of these wild shots that I'd never hear from you. So I really do appreciate your taking the time to do this.
Well, like I said, you don't ask, you don't
you
get.
You may not... Yeah, you may not raise me to world class, but I certainly appreciate whatever you do.
That's, well, that, That's great. That's great. And yeah, in this ebook we're writing is we're going to talk about how to submit work and how to get people's attention. I mean, I get this stuff all day long, and it caught my eye. Had my attention turned elsewhere that Monday morning, you know, I may not have looked at it as deeply as I did.
Yeah.
And so in submitting work to us or anybody else, I'm not saying to you, but I'm saying to anybody who's listening, there's some things you can do to help improve your chance of being noticed.
Yeah. And one thing is not to have my attitude.
Well, that doesn't hurt. Yeah. Keep an open mind. Yeah. But there's a lot of noise out there. You know, you talk about seeing all this junk on Instagram or whatever. There is. There's a lot of noise out there. And, you know, it's hard for us as publishers to find things just because there's so much. And so, you know, if you have a good story to tell, then that really helps. Anyway, David, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for allowing me to.